Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Anthony Heron with you. 1 hour in the books on a Sunday. Thanks so much to both Stacey Dales and Dr. Bill Maurice for joining us in hour number one. Thanks also to Sean Anderson. Spinning the dials on the ones and twos or whatever you radio types, you DJs used to say out there. I haven't gotten to see Sean in person as of late. Is your physique any different, Sean, than it would have been last time I got to lay eyes on you?
No, still super skinny in the arm section, and then in the midsection and legs kind of thicker. So yeah, still
kind of thicker.
Still about the 180 range.
Kind of thicker. Okay. All right. Well, you said it. I didn't. So, but I do believe that gives me license to say it myself as well, then, since you put it out there. Skinny in the arms, thicker in the midsection. All right. We got the scouting report on Sean Anderson there. But appreciate Sean getting me on the air here and allowing me to bless him with a few barbs. Before we get to Kirk Ferentz in a few minutes, I started down a path earlier in the show that I wanted to come back to, and we got a few minutes before Coach Ferentz. If you want to call in, feel free. We can try to get you in quick, but we won't have much time at 312-644-6767. But there's sort of a growing chorus of folks out there talking a lot about the perception of media related to the coverage of this coming football season. And I'm all for having, differences of opinion on risk assessment. Like that to me, that makes all the sense in the world. Like, if you're one of these live free or die types and you don't have an issue with whether it's yourself or a loved one or whomever kind of doing your thing in a variety of ways, that's cool. Like, that might not be my jam, but it can be your jam. The thing that, and I think it's important to have guys like Dr. Maurice on the air discussing these things, because the notion that the collected scientific community, the collected medical community, and it's not just hardcore, one way that they all feel about the studies they're seeing, the information that's available, but the vast majority have been cautioning, a vast majority of the medical scientific community have been cautioning people about this new coronavirus, about COVID-19 throughout the entire calendar year, and especially after. And one of the things I've gotten into previously with Dr. Maurice in more long form interviews that I was able to do with him before was the concept of masking. And I was glad he referenced that towards the end, that wearing masks initially, there wasn't ample information to back that up, to support that scientifically as something that's beneficial. And at this point, it's been this point for a while now, that has been medically determined to be something that the industry agrees is important. And at this point where we're on the precipice, not even the precipice, we're seeing levels of football canceling, states who love football calling off fall football seasons, and political folks, the governors in certain states shutting back down and telling folks to wear masks if they want the football to come back because we love the football. Like, it would have been great to have that months ago. I will say this, though. The I suppose the thought of spiking the football or the I told you so kind of stuff, I do get that from the folks who've been trying to. I would consider myself someone who's been trying to urge people to take this seriously for a long time. Where's the I suppose the onus to be still productive with the discussion at this point? I think part of it, at least my perception, is that part of it comes from a place of frustration where you see people around the country, you see the sports media, people losing jobs. Like the thought that people would actively voice opinions, essentially with the hopes that this sport that funds the livelihoods of so many people, man, professional and major college football, moves the needle like nothing else in this country. It is an industry maker. So the thought that people in the sports media have been rooting for COVID or rooting against football or part of this war on football, I think it's a really, really silly notion. And I don't quite get where that's born from. But that being said, I do think the other part of this as because of where we're at right now, like I've been talking about it on my SiriusXM show for I don't know, probably a couple of months now, that if we as a nation would have handled things differently on the front end, I believe we could have been in a much better place. I have no problem pointing that out. At the same time, I still feel like I'm comfortable with the notion of trying to figure out a path towards a football season. At this point, for where we're at, operating in the modern lens. And so with that being said, like I'm cool looking at college football, looking at the Power Five level especially, trying to figure out what resources will it take? How many tests will we have to have? What types of facilities will need to be available for both contact tracing and then separately quarantining athletes to try and keep them safe, to try and get them back onto the field after that point without just sort of this rapid spread, this super spread of the virus through our locker room, through our campuses, those types of things. It may not be possible. It may not be plausible, but to actually look at it through that lens, I'm comfortable with that at this point without sort of vilifying the notion that college athletes would still want to play football or without railing against decision makers, administrators, like, you know, Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren, he's got a son playing ball at Mississippi State. He wants his son to be safe. That's why it's a laborious decision to potentially call off the season of major college football, because you want industries to survive, but you also want human beings to survive as well. So I get both sides of it, but I do believe that both sides of the discussion operate in some at times, some really drastic extremes. But we got to, I'm going to get back to that later on in the show as well, especially when I'm able to open up some phone lines and hear from you folks on that as well. But I want to get to a timeout here because there's a lot that I want to discuss with the guests we're going to have coming up next. Take a timeout, come back, talk to Kirk Ferentz, head coach of Iowa football, right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to
other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Keith Duncan, true freshman from North Carolina, from 33 yards and a walk-off winner. Right through, and the Hawkeyes have stunned the Wolverines. Michigan unbeaten no more.
Anthony Herron on 670 The Score.
Well, that's what it sounded like one of the times that Kinnick Stadium has been rocking here in recent years when Iowa took down a highly ranked Michigan Wolverine squad. If there's a big win, if there's an upset victory at Kinnick this season, it won't sound quite like that. There will be far less, and we'll see how things develop here. Perhaps no fans in the stands, but right now there are plans for some limited attendance at Iowa football games this coming fall and going into his 22nd season. This man will continue to lead the way for the Hawkeyes. He's my old coach from the University of Iowa, Kirk Ferentz. Kirk, how you doing today?
Anthony, doing fine. Good to be with you. You're right, we'll have to pipe the noise in to make it sound quite like that. But it was a great moment, certainly for Keith and for the whole team.
Yeah, one of many great moments there have been on the field for Iowa. And I reference 22 seasons, so this is your 22nd camp you are going into leading Iowa football. Obviously, things are fairly different. There's going to be a lot of stuff to get into here, but I just want to start with sort of the modern times as you've been watching your players on the field for a couple of days here for fall camp. What stands out as far as just how different things are from a protocol perspective?
Yeah, no question. I mean, there's nothing that's been normal since mid-March for any of us. I know, and certainly as it pertains to the world of college football, it's very, very much true. And so we started 2 days ago or 3 days ago to start our third practice out there. But even going back to the summer when the guys got back on campus, I think they all put an honest effort in their training over the time where they're away. But there's really, again, nothing to compare it to. So most of them didn't have access to good facilities. As you know, training on your own is very different than training with teammates and in a structured environment. So, the guys have, I think, done a really good job of working their way into shape and pleased with that part. But now as we start practice, we're really walking more so than running. And, going back to when you were playing, we're probably doing well. Things have changed dramatically anyway because we're singles now instead of two-a-days. But we're probably doing half the volume maybe we did last year at this time for these three practices and many other obvious differences. We were in shorts and helmets again today instead of moving into shoulder pads. So, it's given us a chance to look at the guys. We're doing a lot of walkthrough work, and the older guys are brushing up on their knowledge of the schemes and all that. And then the younger guys, great opportunity to learn. And you can still film it and teach off of it, but it's really not anywhere comparable to what we've done in the past.
And with resources available to a Big Ten institution like Iowa, there are things that you guys will be able to do from a health and safety perspective that perhaps other conferences, other levels can't pull off. What does it just sort of look like on the practice field? Like, are drills taking place further away than normal? Do you and your players, like I saw masks, even on face masks. How different does that part seem?
That part's really different, and we have to coach that as well as you might imagine. You know, keeping their mask on, even if they're on the sidelines with their helmets off, they've got to have a mask up covering their face and nose and mouth and nose. So, you know, you're coaching those kinds of things as well as the football part of it. We really aren't doing teamwork right now or even group work outside of 7-on-7. And that was the first day today of that. So I think things are really more individual based and otherwise they're walkthrough tempo. So it's very different from that standpoint. You do have to coach the health and safety thing. And we are fortunate in the fact that we can afford the testing that's going to take place. It has taken place, will continue to take place. And we're lucky too, I think, with our hospital here, we're getting a really quick turnaround on those results. So we're very fortunate from that standpoint, but it still doesn't change the fact that the virus is real and that it is impacting what we're doing and limiting what we're doing as well. And that's, I think, the biggest thing as we move forward is, you know, how do we navigate through that?
For the players that are on the field, they're young adults, but still adults. And so there's informed decisions that they need to try to make about how to move forward with this. What was the communication like specific to COVID and the health and safety protocols, even with parents and families, just trying to get a sense for what are their kids going to be going into?
Yeah, it's been interesting. And I think it's probably different to everywhere you go. We really, our sense was most of our players were anxious to get back on campus in June and start training again. And, you know, they demonstrated that throughout June and July. And then same thing with the parents. You know, we've had several meetings with them most recently. I think it was Wednesday night after the Big Ten protocols announced formally the morning before, or that morning. Our medical staff met with the parents, our athletic director, Gary Barta, and myself. And the parents have been great. They had a lot of great questions that night. I think they're about, I don't know, it's close to 100, it's 90 plus questions got answered of the doctors and of Gary Barta, just about procedures, all those types of things. So we wanted to make sure our parents were educated in terms of how we're going to proceed, and then also, you know, well-informed about what all the protocols would be. And I think, you know, as we move down this road here, I think that's one thing the Big Ten's really done a good job of being communicative, starting with Commissioner Warren. I know the athletic directors have met over 100 times since, you know, probably 110, 120 by now, since the pandemic started. And we as coaches have met with them pretty routinely, too, for I guess, over 3 months. So I think the communication's been great. I think we're all on the same page. We all have the same concerns. And clearly, with yesterday's decision and announcement that, you know, we weren't going to move forward with pads, there's still some questions that have to be answered. And, you know, I think what that demonstrates is that the commissioner's committed to, you know, moving in a safe way and a way that, you know, everybody feels comfortable with the medical community, as well as, you know, the athletic side of things.
Kirk Ferentz, Iowa football coach, here with us on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. On that note, Kirk, I mean, as things have continued evolving here, just even in the last 36 hours, let's call it, I mean, where do you sit from a confidence perspective that we'll actually have a college football season?
You know, I don't think anybody can say right now. And if they do, they have more access to a lot more knowledge and information than I do, which is not saying a lot, by the way. But, yeah, you watch what's going on right now at the NBA, the major leagues, and, you know, the NFL is just starting to get going here. But you know, I think it makes everybody aware of the challenges that are out there and the possibilities. And certainly the virus is real, and it's everywhere. You know, it's that's not a secret by any stretch. And then, you know, the contact tracing that goes on, and the collateral damage that goes with, you know, somebody testing positive. So I think as we watch, you know, it's really going to be interesting to see how that all goes. It's really tough to control what a large group of people are doing. And I think we've seen that with the major leagues. So I think right now it's, you know, we're all kind of watching and waiting and just, you know, waiting for a little bit more definition as we go.
I want to look at some of what went down with the Hush Blackwell review. And one thing that I tweeted out after those findings came that got some reaction, some positive, some not so positive. I'll just tell you exactly what I tweeted because I know you're not exactly surfing Twitter at all times. I said, to be blunt.
You know me well.
I said, to be blunt, an old white man willing to listen and see where he can improve it is an example I hope a lot of folks in our society try to emulate. Is there, you've used the term where you normally feel like a teacher and you've tried to become a student here with some of the realizations around your program. What's most striking to you about what this process, these findings have been over the last couple of months?
You know, first of all, I take offense to that old part, you know, I prefer experienced, okay, or, you know, seasoned, something like that, well-seasoned, well-experienced, but no, in all seriousness, you know, I think it's really, you know, been educational for a lot of people, and I think what happened in our country, starting before the end of May, but that's really where things really, I think, you know, hit a crescendo, if you will. I think anybody was paying attention to what's been going on nationally on the social justice side of things, you know, has probably learned an awful lot. And, you know, a vivid memory for me would be the weekend, the last weekend in May, and just watching TV that Sunday morning and hearing some accounts, you know, it was all triggered by the George Floyd thing that really kind of tipped things, I think. But just hearing different accounts and, you know, talking with our coaches and our players during the course of that week. And then most importantly, when our players came back to campus on June 8th, we had one of the more emotional and heated meetings I've ever been involved with at any level, pro, college, high school. But it was also very, very educational. And, you know, we had some meetings last year to look at policies, adjust some things and all that. But we heard things at a whole different level, whole different decibel back in June. And what it's done, it's really kind of opened the door for some great conversation. As coaches, we went through and categorized the things that we heard from our players. And then more importantly, I think we took the steps with our leadership group. We grew that group from about 14 to 24. It's a more diverse group now, age and race, than it was. And you know, we got really good feedback from our players over the course of the next couple of weeks, just talking about the things that were on their minds. And so as a result of that, we've had a chance to, I think, go back and just readjust some of our policies, some things we're doing. And I think everybody's in a better place right now. Feels good about the changes that we have made. But all in all, I think, you know, as I said a week ago Thursday, the most important thing as we move forward now is that we continue to learn, continue to have dialogue, continue to be honest with each other and see what we can do to make things better in our climate and in our environment. And that's really all we can control. We can't change things, you know, 100 miles from here, but the things that we're doing with our program and that affect and impact our players, that's where our focus has been. So it's really been, it's been good. And, you know, I think we're all, you know, eager to go. We want to go. And now the biggest, you know, the biggest question is if we're going to get a chance to go and you know, just see how things are moving forward. But the bottom line is we've got a really good group of people here, be it our coaches, our support staff, but most importantly, the players that we've had here. And this is my 30th year now, total 31st, I guess, at the University of Iowa as a coach. And the one commonality, whether it was 1981 or right till today, is the quality of people that we get to work with. And, you know, you're a great example of that, Anthony. You know, just, you know, we've had a lot of really quality people through the years here, and that's been the best part about this whole thing.
And as you know, Chicago Bears offensive lineman, fellow Hawkeye, James Daniels, he was the one who sparked the discussion on social media. And his comments initially were kind of more macro about inequities with treatment of black players versus white players. And then there were a lot more specifics about Chris Doyle. And you've used the term blind spots in weeks sort of since then. Would you say that blind spots, was that more about things you didn't know or more things you just didn't sort of adequately interpret that had taken place?
Maybe a little bit of each, but I think probably one of the bigger takeaways is one thing I've learned, it's funny, Dave Porter puts it in a little different term, but Dave is one of your classmates, teammates, not right. classmate, but mm-hmm. same generation, obviously. I guess one thing became apparent to me, and as we move forward, how do you ask better questions? How do you get more clear, direct feedback? And we got plenty of it on June 8th, believe me. And that was what was healthy about that meeting. I mean, it was raw, it was emotional, but it was direct and it was honest. And so how do you get it better as you move along with without having to go through, you know, a peak like that? So, but the other big lesson, big takeaway. So when the tweet came out, James had that first one. But there were three in particular, the night of June 5th. That triggered, you know, I started making phone calls that evening and pretty much spent the next 2 weeks on the phone with former players if I wasn't, you know, visiting with our players and either in a team setting or one-on-one during that period. And one thing I really learned, missed opportunity, I think one great thing about former players, they tend to be a little bit more candid. They're not worried about playing time. They're not worried about rocking the boat, all that kind of stuff as much. They're out of the building, right? And the other part is they're a little bit more worldly, too. So, you know, during that period, a lot of conversations with players over the last 20 years just to try to get a better feel of what is it that, you know, in your opinion, needs to be fixed, and then is it fixable, those types of questions. So, you know, as we move forward, we have formed an advisory committee, and it's 11 players that have played here. In the past, it could have been 111. And, you know, I mean, we've got so many great guys that have come through here, yourself included, that would be valuable. But, you know, we're going to tap into that group now to get a little bit better, you know, just bounce ideas off them. What do you think? You know, that type of thing. But, the bottom line is no matter how long you do something, and, you know, I think the other part of the blind spot is that, you know, our exit interviews have been fairly positive. We've won 19 games the last 2 years. I felt we were a very healthy program, healthy team back in December when we beat USC for our 10th win. Felt great about where we were on March 13th. But the lesson learned there is that, you know, things can still be better. There are things that we can do to improve. And so the blind spot or the challenge is how do we get that information better, get that information in a faster manner, more direct manner. So, if there is something that needs to be adjusted or fixed, we can do that. I think that's kind of that's a long-winded answer, but that's kind of the synopsis of it.
And you've before we let you go, you've said, Kirk, that a few times here recently that related to the anthem and how your team would handle it, and whether kneeling or whatever, but that it would be a uniformed approach that your team would take and a collective decision with that. I'm just curious, beyond whether or not your players stand or kneel, do you see for these current discussions that are going on in your program, about your program, is there an opportunity, maybe even a responsibility for Iowa football, for Kirk Ferentz to be sort of an example of how the perception of black athletes, of their experiences, can evolve for people who perhaps didn't even see it through a certain lens?
Yeah, I'll be happy to address that. So I think I came out three years ago, 17, I think is when everything kind of like started out on that topic. And I said on public record, you know, and I still feel this way in a perfect world, right? In a perfect world. When people go into Kinnick, and I pick Kinnick because it's, you know, our stadium, and I'm looking right at it as I sit here at my desk. So in a perfect world to me, when we all go in Kinnick, it's all about the competitiveness, the sportsmanship, and, you know, for the fans, it's a chance to get away from all the ills that we have and all the challenges we have. And we do have the best country, but we still have things that, you know, obviously need to be fixed and addressed. To me, it's a chance to get away from all that stuff. And that's one of the things I've loved about sports and coaching is that, you know, you're not involved in the politics of this world and all that stuff. But, you know, so that's kind of how I saw it. And my hopes were that we would all be together on that. And so as we've transitioned forward now a couple of years later, I am seeing it through a whole different lens right now. And in a perfect world, I would, at least I thought I wanted our team to, you know, either everybody stand or everybody kneel. But, you know, we've had a couple of meetings talking about the topic. And I think what's really important is that whatever our players decide, they have respect for each other, because we have guys in both camps, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. Some guys want to stand, some guys want to kneel. But the thing I've been impressed with our players is the dialogue they've had, and this is that leadership group of 24 players. They've had great dialogue. They've had total respect for each other's feelings and their vantage point. And, you know, really that's kind of what our country's been founded on. That is why people went out and fought for our freedoms, is so we could have freedom of expression. And, you know, so as you look at it and you move down the road here a little bit, and I think we are in a different time than we were a couple of years ago. So, you know, I'm looking at it through a whole different thing. We haven't put a lid on it yet. We haven't decided permanently what we're going to do or 100% what we're going to do. But I guess my takeaway on this whole thing is my hopes are that our guys would just have respect for everybody's opinion. I think that's a beautiful thing about teamwork and sportsmanship anyway, is that, you know, you're on a team of 100 plus people. Everybody's got to have respect for each other and their belief system and whatever values they may have. As long as there's that commonality that we're all doing this together for a certain reason. But, you know, when you walk out of the building, we're all individuals. That's the other great thing about sports. But the commonality from, you know, being in the team part of things, great. But then the respect for all of us as we're individuals and our beliefs, politics, race, religion, all those things. I mean, that's what makes our country great. And quite frankly, that's what we're lacking in our country right now. But to listen to our players in the couple of meetings we've had, the discussions, I'm really proud of them. And it makes you feel good that, you know, hey, these guys are actually listening to each other, talking with each other, not yelling at each other, talking and respecting each other's opinions. And when we walk out, everybody's got, you know, we're still a team. We're all together on stuff. So, yeah, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but yeah, looking at a whole different lens than maybe, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, that's for sure.
Well, Kirk, as I have shared with you, I think the discussion in and around Iowa football, while difficult, while awkward, while uncomfortable, I think is going to be, already has been, and will continue to be a positive thing for the program and for those who care about it. So I do appreciate your time today, Kirk.
Yeah, that's certainly our goal, Anthony. We're going to work hard at that. And as I said earlier, the most important thing is we continue working hard. And but I'm confident that we will. We have really good people. So, you know, it's been quite a learning experience for sure for all of us. And, you know, a little bit more public than we all would like. But sometimes growth is painful, right? And that's I think that's what we've been doing. So just – Now I'm hopeful that we all get a chance to go out and play, because I think we really have a great group of guys here. So we'll just we'll take it a day at a time and see where this road goes.
From your lips to God's ears. Hopefully we have a safe and a healthy football season. That's Kirk Ferentz of Iowa Football. Thanks a lot, Kirk. Talk to you soon.
Great talking to you, Anthony. Thanks for having me on.
Find the program at Hawkeye Football on the Twitter sphere. You will not find Kirk Ferentz on Twitter, though. He does not have an account, but as he has allowed his team on Twitter, I'm sure he's spending even more time now surfing and searching what's going on in what can be at times an uncomfortable app to peruse as well. So going to have some things to react to from that discussion with Kirk Ferentz, but got a timeout on the other side of this timeout. Not only some Iowa, but some more macro college football discussions with a guest who's as locked in, as tied in as any that you will find on the college sports sphere. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic will join us on the other side of this timeout here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Anthony Heron here on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. Free to hit me up there. Just had a discussion with my old college coach, Kirk Ferentz, from the University of Iowa. Covered a variety of topics, where things stand right now with COVID-19, his players being on the field, whether or not he thinks there's going to be a college football season, and certainly got into some of the findings about his Hawkeye football program. Hell, our Hawkeye football program is my program, too. I bled, I sweat out on the field over there, left a few body parts on the field at Kinnick Stadium, but we discussed that as well. We'll dive into a reaction to some of that in the final hour of the show, in addition to some baseball talk as well. Man, we got so many great guests. I wanted to make sure we got on the show today. So, ladies and greatest on the way here, Nicole Auerbach on the line right now. You can find her on Twitter at Nicole Auerbach. She is of The Athletic. Great writings there. And, of course, all the sourcing that's available for her materials that get posted. Breaking news left and right. She's also on the Big Ten Network. And one of my teammates over at SiriusXM. Nicole, how are you on this fine Sunday?
been hanging in there, hoping to get outside, get for a nice walk at some point. Can't guarantee that every day. So.
Right. Well, I mean, especially for you, where I would imagine that with the way that college sports news, that the football coverage is just kind of ever cycling right now with different conferences making a variety of decisions. And I think normally Power Five fans probably wouldn't care so much what happens at the FCS level or what UConn does, but it all feels kind of combined and important. Just wondering how much of it will have a domino effect. No?
Yeah, it is all connected. And I think that that's something that, people need to think about sometimes. I mean, like, for example, let's go through what the Mid-American Conference just did. So because everyone has different budgets, because, the reactions to the virus and the ability to test and get, results back is different in different parts of the country, that contributed to the Big Ten's decision to cancel non-conference games. So that cost the MAC a lot of games. Even though the decision is, you're thinking about like FCS programs, like they don't have those budgets. They can't afford to do this. So then because the MAC doesn't have those games on the schedule, they're looking at options and scheduling and things like that. It ultimately leads them to deciding not to have a fall FCS football season, which then is going to put pressure on leagues like the Big Ten, right? So it's all connected because they're all under the same umbrella. Because of that, that's part of the reason there's been so much tension around, the NCAA's decisions about fall championships and things like that. Because the Power Five, yes, they have different resources and they have different interests and motivations, but they are still under that same umbrella. So everything is interconnected, and decisions that, get made kind of down the line end up going right back up and affecting, the Power Five. So it is a fascinating time with a lot of different, power struggles and competing interests, and it's we're not near the end yet, but these decisions and the way that things these dominoes are ultimately going to fall, it's going to impact the way that college sports like moves forward from this year.
With the Big Ten deciding really during the weekend here essentially that they're going to keep teams for the time being within what's thought of as the acclimation period, being in helmets only for now.
Mm-hmm.
What should be read into that related to the fate of the season itself?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think people are still trying to figure that out because, I think you can absolutely just see it as, this is a league that just, spent all this time and energy putting together a medical protocol and has been very clear throughout. Kevin Warren, the new commissioner, has been very clear throughout about, not moving forward to different steps unless, they're comfortable with that. So it just comes at a weird time because they did just release the schedule with anticipated September 5th weekend games. So, if they had done, let's say what the Pac-12 or the SEC was doing and pushed back the start of the season, you wouldn't even be at the point of trying to put pads on right now. So, they have that flexibility to move games, to move week one back, start the season later and all of those things. But I think it's just the juxtaposition against, aiming for that and then on the same week saying, okay, we're not quite there yet. Like, let's just put a pause before we, put our athletes at risk where we're not comfortable doing that yet. So I think people are still trying to figure out, again, what it necessarily means for things moving forward. But this is a league and a commissioner that have been very cautious throughout all of this. And very much relying on what their medical experts say. So I assume, that's where this decision is coming from.
Nicole Auerbach, our guest here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You made what I believe was your debut on NBC Nightly News the other night.
Yes.
Is that correct? What were some of the things that were found from that story and some of the things you shared with the nation?
Yeah, well, it was a very eventful 5 seconds, the segment. Definitely got cut.
Your hair looked great though, Nicole. It really did.
Thank you. So it was an interesting, their segment, their reporter went out to USF for their first day of fall camp. So, it is, again, this is all a very interesting time because those high level decisions about whether or not there is a season and what it looks like and if it can start and all these things are happening as campuses are opening fall camp and, places like Notre Dame are set to start classes with regular students and things of that nature. Right. So it's all kind of happening at once. It was honestly jarring to watch that clip and see footage from, a football practice like at a training camp, because you know, it's just been so long since there have been like real team activities like that. And obviously there were some week zero teams that started a week prior, but obviously this past Friday was a big day for a lot of programs.
Names like Brady Feeney and Xavier Thomas, who are players who've spoken publicly or had family members describe publicly about what they've gone through in complications, not a fatality, but just in health complications in dealing with COVID. Is your sense that that information that continues to come in from athletes along those lines is still at this point sort of having an effect on protocols that are and will continue to be in place with athletes on the practice field?
Impacting the protocols, because I think that certainly some of what has happened and with the examples that you're bringing up are like, we just don't know how individual bodies react to COVID-19 and that people who are otherwise healthy, you know, it can have different impacts or long-term impacts that we don't know yet, which is kind of why, like, I mean, me and you are being cautious, right? Like, I don't, obviously I'm caring for other people that I'm interacting with, but I also don't want to test this out and see like what the long-term damage could potentially be for someone like me, right? So I think that you know is certainly raising alarm bells across the country, because it's your worst fear, is that you can have social distancing, you can require masks, you can do these things, but you're not going to be able to guarantee that people don't contract the virus, and you don't know how different people are going to react to it. So I think that, you know, I don't know if it's impacting like the specific protocols and the way that people are setting things up, because they're only really able to mitigate risk and spread. They're not able to stop it, but it's definitely impacting, you know, the way that people are thinking about these decisions and, you know, potentially having a fall season, because again, it's kind of the worst case scenario that somebody has a long-term impact from it, but B, needs to be hospitalized. I mean, you don't want that. These are college students. These are 18 to 22 year olds. These are athletes who are not employees. They're not being paid to play. And again, it's the worst case scenario for administrators.
With the movements that have begun to continue to pick up steam, the uniformity that some of the athletes have, whether you're talking Pac-12 with their We Are United, what they termed as unity demands, and the Big Ten United, and some things they're addressing more from a health and safety perspective with the Big Ten Conference, then we've also seen, you know, really prominent people like Trevor Lawrence, Clemson quarterback, Ohio State's players, led by, in part, Tuff Borland, one of their team captains. They've come out talking about the desire to play. Mm-hmm. To sort of bifurcate for us the different, I suppose, segments of athletes with the concerns that there are for stepping onto the field versus a sort of growing chorus as well of those who are comfortable with where things stand.
Yeah, I think it makes sense that we're seeing, you know, that it's, I would say backlash, but I don't mean that in a negative way, but the response that you have a lot of players saying that they do want to play and they do feel comfortable in the health and safety protocols, because obviously, like, it's not 100% of the players that are, you know, demanding different things or unhappy with how their schools are handling things. But I do think it's important to have both sides represented in this. I think it's important that, you know, athletes feel comfortable, you know, collectively bringing up issues that are important to them. And I thought the Big Ten letter was really good, because it was very focused, right? It was the Pac-12 one, some of the revenue demands and various pieces to that ended up kind of changing the way we talked about it. Whereas the Big Ten, you know, it was focused on health and safety protocols. A lot of them were either already met or about to be met by the Big Ten and NCAA, you know, in terms of like not signing liability waivers and things of that nature. And then, you know, obviously very reasonable things about covering costs related to COVID and, you know, some economic pieces, but it was very focused on, you know, the tangible, what is realistic, what is doable, what is, you know, kind of immediate. And I think that, you know, they're starting productive conversations, even if people aren't sure there's going to be a season. So like concerns about opting out and things are already on the table. You already have star players doing that. So, you know, the idea of like a collective opt-out maybe isn't as jarring as it would be in a different year. I still think, you know, it's great that we're having these conversations, that those voices are being heard, and that they are thinking about collective action, because, you know, we have seen this whole off season. You've seen so much and learned so much about the value of a players union. I think we saw that with the NBA negotiations. We saw that with baseball, really contentious, but having somebody to advocate on your behalf and approve the health and safety measures, that's something that they don't have. And so I think it's just a really positive step that they're thinking about that and what they deserve, and that their voice isn't at the table in a lot of these conversations. And so, you know, I think that that's something that no matter how this resolves, I think that that's going to continue, you know, past this fall, past, you know, whatever happens with the football season.
Is your sense at the moment from, you know, some of the main stakeholders, the decision makers out there right now, is your sense as of this weekend that it's still more likely than not that there will at least begin a college football season?
I can't answer that right now. I mean, it depends who you talk to and what time of day, right? Like it changes. But I do certainly think there's also a difference in opinions where people think that, you know, maybe you get to that point where you shut it down versus when, and, you know, at what point our president's going to get there, and various stakeholders. And so I think it's a little bit, you know, it's too soon to tell. I think, you know, I've seen people kind of, you know, talk about like, you kind of need a Hail Mary or a miracle, or like, you know, kind of society to drastically change and not overwhelm healthcare systems and things like that. Right. Some of that stuff is not going to happen. There's not going to be a miracle, that will suddenly make it okay to play. But it's really going to come down to, again, you know, just how much people are going to try to make it happen. Right. I almost said force this through, but it's a little bit like that, right? It's a little bit like, you know, just kind of making it happen. We're seeing that with baseball. You know, they didn't shut down. I think a lot of us thought that they would shut down after the Marlins breakup, outbreak. But so it's hard to predict because, you know, you do have a lot of different opinions. You have a different stakeholders. There's so much money at stake. So there are people who want to say, like, let's give it every possible minute we can before we make a decision, because maybe things will improve. Maybe things will get better. And at the very least, you can say you gave it your best, right? And so, again, you know, it's hard to predict. I think there are a lot of factors that are not going to help, you know, bringing regular students back to campus, which is, again, starting at a number of places this week, plus opening fall camp at a number of campuses and seeing what that does for the spread within a team. You know, those are two factors that might decide this whole thing, and they've both been unknown until now. So, you know, that could also, you know, make the decision maybe not easier, because I don't think it's going to be easy either way, but maybe more straightforward.
Well, you're obviously a prominent member of the sports media, so I'm just curious, how hard are you rooting against football?
I can't believe we're still, you know, fighting that narrative.
It's very odd.
It is odd because somebody had a great example. It was like, oh, we were looking outside saying it might rain. So, you know, why are you rooting against my birthday party? You know, like, it just doesn't work. Because obviously we all want a football season. We work in sports because we love sports. And, you know, it's our livelihood. But I think it would be irresponsible to, honestly, to put your head in the sand and pretend like this stuff isn't happening. You know, I think I've tried to report on what people are saying, doing, and contingency plans and all of those things. And, you know, again, if people want to project that as rooting against something, then, you know, I just don't know if you understand our jobs. I do think there are opinions and columnists out there who are, you know, pushing more of opinion, but that's not everyone. And especially those of us who literally got into this because we love the sports we cover. It's, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
I could not agree more. As always, outstanding stuff, Nicole. Look forward to continuing to see your coverage of this, because I know if there's news to be broken, you will be on top of it. Thanks for your time today.
All right. Thanks for having me. Take care.
That is Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic, of SiriusXM, and of the Big Ten Network. You can find her on Twitter at Nicole Auerbach, and apparently you can find her texting with a variety of different conference commissioners. And when that happens, she makes sure folks know when news needs to be broken. It's been a football-heavy first couple of hours here that I've been on the air on Sunday, which, hey, that's my game. That's my gig. But beyond that, there's big baseball going on in town. Both teams would be eligible for the postseason at the moment. And the White Sox going to be on national television, man. ESPN Sunday Night Baseball with the Southsiders going at it. So let's talk some baseball. Let's talk some White Sox. We're going to have Scott Merkin on the line on the other side of this timeout to talk about the good guys. We'll do that next here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.